Shalom, everyone. I'm Josiah Jeffrey.
I'm Hosea Jeffrey.
And we're back discussing the Torah portions. This week, we're looking at the portion of Vezot HaBaracha, which means, and this is the blessing. This is the final portion in the book of Deuteronomy and in the whole Torah. The reading today is from Deuteronomy 33:1 through 34:12. We've already read the portion ahead of time, so if you'd like to read it as well, why don't you go ahead and pause the video and do that, and then we'll go ahead and get into discussing.
In Vezot HaBaracha, Moses concludes the Torah with his final words of blessing to the tribes of the people of Israel and ascends to the top of Mount Nebo, where God shows him the promised land. And finally, Moses, the man of God, dies and is buried in the plains of Moab.
So this portion begins with Moses giving blessings to the tribes of Israel before he ascends Mount Nebo, where he is going to die. As we read previously in the Torah, and it was briefly said at the end of the last portion, even though we kind of skimmed over it, Moses had previously broken faith with God by not believing him when he had given Moses a command, and so God had said that as a punishment, Moses wouldn't be able to cross over into the promised land and lead the people there. And so now Moses is right here at the very end of his life. He has given the entire Torah. He's led the people of Israel for 40 years. He's given them the Song of Moses. He's given them everything. And so now right here at the end of his life, he's giving them one more thing, which is a blessing for the 12 tribes of Israel. This is actually very similar to the end of Genesis, when Jacob is on his deathbed and he proceeds to give blessings to his 12 sons. Here, Moses is at the end of his life, and he's giving blessings to the 12 tribes of Israel. He starts out by poetically recounting how God showed himself on Mount Sinai and gave the Torah and called the people of Israel. And it says, indeed, he loves the people. All your holy ones are in your hand. And he was king in Jeshurun, which is a name for Israel, when the heads of the people were gathered, the tribes of Israel together. So this is just asserting how God is the God of Israel. He loves the people of Israel, and he is their king. And so these blessings are coming from the God of Israel.
It's very interesting that Moses starts this blessing of Israel with what happened at Sinai, how God became the king of Israel by the Torah that he gave through Moses and by the glory and the power which he showed when he declared his words from the mountain. And so this shows that the foundation of his blessing to Israel is who God is and that God has chosen Israel. This basically encapsulates stuff that we've said time and time again, that God has chosen Israel and that's why they're blessed, but also that they get the blessings if they follow God, if they obey him and listen to his commands. But if they don't listen to his commands, then they don't get the blessings. So all these blessings for Israel come down to this is the people of God and they have the rules of God. They just need to pay attention to them. So I want to start by talking about the blessing for the tribe of Judah. Even though Moses is giving a bunch of blessings to the different tribes here, we're not going to go through all of them, but we are going to focus on some of them that we found particularly interesting, starting with Judah. Moses says, "Hear, O Adonai, the voice of Judah, and bring him in to his people. With your hands, contend for him and be a help against his adversaries." So basically, what Moses is blessing the people of Judah here with is victory. He's saying, God will be with you, God will fight with you and defeat your enemies, and you will have victory over them. And I did find this parallel with Jacob's blessing to the tribe of Judah, which talked about Judah having the obedience of all the peoples and how his hand would be on the neck of his enemies. So Judah in particular is going to be a warrior tribe which has victory. And this is fulfilled in David, the head of the tribe of Judah, the king not only of Judah but of Israel, who fought for Israel and defeated all their enemies. And more than that, it also points to the Lion of Judah, Messiah, the son of David, who will fight and subdue all of Israel's enemies and will be a savior for Israel and vindicate his people.
So next I want to talk about the blessing for the tribe of Levi. In this case, Moses harkens back to some previous incidents in the Torah, and he also obviously talks about the priesthood, which belongs to the sons of Aaron within the tribe of Levi. Moses says to the tribe of Levi, "Let your Thummim and your Urim belong to your godly man who said of his father and his mother, 'I did not consider them,' and he did not acknowledge his brothers. Nor did he regard his own sons, for they observed your word and kept your covenant. They shall teach your ordinances to Jacob, and your law, your Torah, to Israel. They shall put incense before you, and whole burnt offerings on your altar. O Adonai, bless his substance, and accept the work of his hands. Shatter the loins of those who rise up against him, and those who hate him, so that they will not rise again. So Moses starts out by talking about Urim and Thummim, which, as we read about back in Exodus, these are the means by which the priest will inquire of God to know what decisions the priest wants him to make. And then Moses harkens back to the incident at the golden calf, when the people of Israel had set up an idol and they were all worshiping it. And so then Moses comes down from Mount Sinai and says, "Whoever is for Adonai, come to me." And the tribe of Levi came to Moses and said, "We're for Adonai." And at that point, Moses commanded the tribe of Levi, "Start going back and forth through the camp of Israel and killing people, your friends, your sons, your brothers, anybody that you come across, to avenge God on the people of Israel." And the Levites did this. They struck the Israelites, not caring that it was their own family that they were killing. They killed because God had commanded it. And so here, Moses is now blessing the tribe of Levi for being faithful to God in this way. As we've read previously, God's portion and inheritance for the tribe of Levi is the priesthood and is God himself. God is giving that to the tribe of Levi, and then they are going to be the ones who teach the Torah to the entire people of Israel. And also, God will be against anyone who is against the tribe of Levi and tries to hurt them. And I thought it was interesting contrasting this blessing from Moses versus the blessing that Jacob gave to the tribe of Levi back in Genesis. It actually wasn't a blessing, it was a curse. He cursed both Levi and Simeon because in their anger, they had taken vengeance on an entire city and wiped them out because they were angry. And so Jacob cursed their violence and said that because of that, they'd be scattered in Israel. And so whereas in Genesis, Jacob had cursed Levi and Simeon's violence, here Levi's violence was at God's command. It's almost like Levi has redeemed itself from what happened back in Genesis. Interestingly, Moses doesn't give a blessing for the tribe of Simeon here. He's just totally left out, and there's no reason given here. But for Levi, as opposed to getting a curse like he did back in Genesis, he's getting a blessing because they valued obeying God's command more than they valued their family. And this goes to the concept that Yeshua teaches, and we've referenced it multiple times all throughout the Torah portions, that whoever loves his father or mother or brother or sister or children or even his own life above him is not able to be his disciple and is not worthy of him. And Yeshua says that our love for our families should be hate compared to our love for him. And so this just goes to show, if we put God first in our lives, first above everything else, even above our family, then God will bless that. He will see our faithfulness and he will say, "That is a good servant and I will bless him in the long run." We may not see those blessings in this life, but we know that God will see and he will bless us in the long run. And that is the only blessing that matters.
And then there's the blessing for the tribe of Joseph, which is the longest of all the blessings given here. And this blessing is actually very parallel to the blessing that Jacob gave to the tribe of Joseph all the way back in Genesis 49. Moses is promising Joseph fruitfulness and having the best of all the land and the best of the produce and basically the best blessings of all the tribes. Mm. And at the end of this blessing, he says, "A firstborn bull, he has majesty, and his horns are the horns of a wild ox. With them he shall gore the peoples, all of them, to the ends of the earth. They are the 10,000s of Ephraim, and they are the 1,000s of Manasseh." So this blessing is a double blessing to Ephraim and to Manasseh, basically saying, similarly to Judah, Ephraim and Manasseh are going to be weapons which gore the peoples. Mm. So they're going to be very powerful in the sight of all the nations to the ends of the earth. But interestingly, he says the 10,000s of Ephraim and the 1,000s of Manasseh, thereby saying Ephraim is going to be bigger than Manasseh, which is something we've already talked about, how Jacob gave the bigger blessing to Ephraim. And so basically, this is showing Moses is confirming the blessings that Jacob gave to his sons. And as we talked about before, when we read those blessings, these will come to fruition when, as Ezekiel prophesied, God takes the stick of Judah and joins it to the stick of Joseph and brings all the people from all the tribes, especially from the tribes of Joseph and Ephraim, and he brings them all back to the land where they are fruitful. And like this blessing predicts, all the finest of the land of Israel is placed on the head of Joseph.
So we're going to skip forward here to the end of Moses' blessings after he's finished blessing the different tribes of Israel. At this point, he goes back to giving general blessings for the entire people, again blessing God himself, saying there's no other God like him. But then at the end, he says, "So Israel dwells in security, the fountain of Jacob secluded, in a land of grain and new wine. His heavens also drop down dew. Blessed are you, O Israel." The Hebrew says, "Happy are you, O Israel. Who is like you? A people saved by Adonai, who is the shield of your help and the sword of your majesty. So your enemies will cringe before you, and you will tread upon their high places." So Moses reaffirms here what we've said all throughout the Torah, which is that God chose the people of Israel to be unique, to be unlike any other people group on the face of the planet. Israel is the only people group that God saved from slavery in Egypt. And he's the only one that he saved through the 10 plagues, the only one that he gave the Torah to, the only one that he's led in all these miraculous ways. And when the people of Israel put their trust in the God of Israel, then they will dwell in security in their land. God will continue to save them. He'll save them from their enemies. He'll subdue all the enemies of Israel such that they can live in peace. And Moses' language here reminds me of something that we read in the prophet Jeremiah, where he ties Israel's security in the land to the coming of the Messiah, the son of David. He says, "Behold, the days are coming, declares Adonai, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch, and he will reign as king and act wisely and do justice and righteousness in the land. In his days, Judah will be saved, and Israel will dwell securely. And this is his name by which he will be called, Adonai, our righteousness." So again, there's this concept of the people of Israel being saved and dwelling securely. And Jeremiah says that that comes when God raises up a branch for David. This is a very clear and obvious reference to the Messiah. So this is indicating that the blessings that God is giving to the people of Israel through his servant Moses, those blessings can only come to fruition through the Messiah of Israel. And that Messiah is Yeshua. I also want to bring this back to the concept of, it says that what one nation is like Israel, a people whom God saved. And here it says, in his days, Judah will be saved. There's this concept of salvation linked with dwelling securely in the land and linked with the coming of the Messiah. The Messiah is the one who will save the people of Israel, not only from their enemies, but he'll also save his people from their sins. And when that happens, they'll be able to live in peace in their land forever until the end of days.
After all that Moses has said in this whole Torah, these are literally his last words right here. And so here in this last verse of ever that Moses said, he says, "Happy are you, O Israel, who is like you, a people saved by Adonai." Mm. And so that right there is what it all comes down to. Despite all the commands and all the promises and all the blessings and all the curses, at the end of it all, this is what Moses is saying. Who is like you, Israel, a people saved by Adonai? And so I think this points to what Paul says, that one day all Israel will be saved. Not just saved from their enemies, but like Josiah said, saved from their sins. The Messiah Yeshua has come to save his people. That's literally what his name means. And so this is what makes Israel different. Mm. The crazy thing is that the national salvation of Israel is one of the things that makes Israel different from all the other nations, and especially happy and blessed. Mm. And so as Moses is reaching the end of his life, saying his final words, this is the promise that he sets his eyes on, that he calls attention to, the promise that God will save Israel. His whole life's work all comes down to this. Who is like Israel? God will save Israel.
And so now, finally, we get to the last chapter in the Torah. And in this chapter, it says that Moses goes up Mount Nebo to die. Like God has said to Moses multiple times throughout the Torah, he's going to let Moses see the promised land from the top of Mount Nebo, but he can't go there. And so, according to God's command, Moses went up Mount Nebo, and then it says that God showed him the entire land. He showed him where Ephraim and Manasseh will be. He showed him where Judah will be. He showed him where Naphtali will be. He showed him the whole thing. And he said, "This is the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I give it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there." So God is letting Moses see, this is the fulfillment of the promise that I made over 500 years ago. This is it. I'm fulfilling it after you die. Moses has gotten right to the cusp of the promised land. He's led the people of Israel this whole way for 40 years, almost there, almost to claiming the promise, but Moses just has to see it from afar. He can't claim that for himself. He can't lead the people of Israel across the Jordan. And so then it says that Moses, the servant of Adonai, dies on Mount Nebo, and that God buries him, but no one else even knows where God buried him. His grave is unknown to anyone, and the people of Israel mourn their leader for 30 days. It says that Moses lived to be 120 years old, and to the end of his life, his eyes were undimmed. He still had his strength. He was a vigorous man, and he stayed that way until the very day of his death. And then at the age of 120 years, Moses, the man of God, the prophet who led his people, he dies, and the whole people of Israel mourn.
So we see that after all Moses did, he didn't end up going to the promised land. He saw it from afar, but he didn't get to enter in and receive the blessings of that promise. And yet we see that Moses was not alone. Moses was in good company, because What did God say to Moses? He said, "This is the land of which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to your offspring." Mm. All three of them, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they had the promise too. The promise, "I will give it to your offspring." So all of them lived and died and spent their lives believing and hoping in a promise that would not be fulfilled in their lifetimes. Mm. The same as Moses. They all believed for something that would come to pass for a generation after them. That after they died, the promise would be fulfilled. And so this is what the author of Hebrews says when he says, "In faith, all these died, not having received the promises, but having seen them from afar, and having greeted them, and having confessed that they are strangers and temporary residents upon the earth. For those saying such things make it apparent that they seek a homeland. And if indeed they had been mindful of that from which they went out, then they might have had an opportunity to return. But now they long for a better homeland, that is, a heavenly one. Mm. Therefore, God is not ashamed of them to be called their God, for he prepared for them a city." Moses died without entering the promised land, without receiving the promise, but seeing it from afar. And he believed that the people of Israel were going to enter in and take it, that his life's work would be fulfilled, that the people that he had led would finish the work that he had started. And yet we see from what Hebrews says here, that promised land that Moses saw was not the homeland that he was looking for. Moses left the land of Egypt behind. He was a son of the daughter of Pharaoh. He had all the wealth of Egypt at his disposal, and yet he chose instead to side with God's people, to leave the land of Egypt behind, to go out into the wilderness with a bunch of stubborn, rebellious people who fought him every single step of the way because God told him to, because God commissioned him and said, "I have a promise, I have a homeland that is better than the land of Egypt." And so Moses decided to leave his home in Egypt behind, instead looking for a better homeland. And that homeland was not Canaan, because he didn't enter into it. The homeland he was looking for was a heavenly one. Indeed, after Moses left Egypt, he spent his whole life sojourning, wandering in the wilderness without a home, because he knew that his home was in the heavens. Everywhere on this earth was a temporary residence for Moses. But Moses never looked back. He always looked ahead. He looked ahead to the promises that God had made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob being fulfilled when the people of Israel entered into the land, and he looked ahead to his own homeland, a greater promised land, a heavenly promised land, which comes through Yeshua. Moses had faith in the promises of Yeshua, that he would have life, everlasting life in Yeshua. And ultimately, Moses died without receiving this promise. And yet, after he died, he did receive this promise. Moses trusted in God to the very end, and God did not let him down. God never lets anyone down. Moses did go to a better promised land than the promised land that is here. He received that heavenly homeland. And in fact, the New Covenant scriptures record a time when Moses got to meet Yeshua and talk with him. Yeshua's disciples saw Moses and Elijah in bright white garments and talk with their Messiah, their Savior, who gives them life and who gives them that heavenly homeland. So even though Moses lived and suffered and worked and died without receiving the promise, he did receive the promise after he died. And that's what all the patriarchs and all the men of faith in the Bible were looking toward. They were looking beyond the point of death. They were looking across the Jordan River, as it were, a place where they themselves could not go as long as they were on this earth, but they could see it from afar. God gave them the faith to see it, and by following to the end, by following to death, they got to enter into that homeland. And so we also need to do the same. Like all the people who went before us, we need to have the faith to follow God. We need to have the faith to live our whole lives without receiving the promise, yet knowing that we will receive that homeland at the end. Moses spent his whole life equipping those who went ahead of him. Knowing that he himself would not cross over the Jordan, he nonetheless prepared an entire generation to do the same. And so we need to realize that all the men of faith who came before us paved the way for us. They showed us the path. By going before us, they, in a way, led us in the way of faith. And so we need to follow them. We need to walk the same way. We need to walk the way of faith, which leads to Yeshua, which leads to salvation and life and that better homeland, not of this earth. And more than that, as long as we are here, we need to work to lead others on that path. Our life here is not to be spent trying to gain something for ourselves, because our homeland isn't here. We can't receive the promise as long as we're here. On the contrary, Paul says that in a way, it's better for us to go and be with Messiah, because that's where the promise is, not here. But like Moses, we have a calling, and our calling is not just to receive the promise. Our calling is to lead others. With the life that we have on this earth, we need to call others. We need to save them. We need to show them the way that leads to the promised land. We need to gather them out of wherever they've gone and tell them Messiah and the promises and life await if you will follow me as I follow Messiah. And so we will live our whole lives leading other people to a place that we cannot enter until we die. And they cannot enter until they die. But if we walk the path of faith and lead others in the path of faith, then we will all come to the finish line. We will all receive the promise at the end, not on this earth, not in this life, but in the next life, the glorious life, the everlasting life in Yeshua.
Now, finally, the Torah finishes up by talking about how Joshua, the son of Nun, became the new leader of Israel. After the people of Israel finished mourning the death of Moses, it says that Joshua, the son of Nun, was filled with the spirit of wisdom, just like Moses had been. And it says that the reason for this is because Moses himself had laid his hands on Joshua before he had died. And so he had basically transferred his position as the leader of Israel. He transferred that over to Joshua. And so the people of Israel, they listened to Joshua the same way that they used to listen to Moses. But then the very last verses in all the Torah say, "Since that time, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom Adonai knew face to face. For all the signs and wonders which Adonai sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh, all his servants, and all his land, and for all the mighty power and for all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of all Israel." So the ending of the Torah almost feels incomplete because it's like, at first it seems like it's all good because he's transferring everything off to Joshua. And so he's going to lead just like Moses had. But then it finishes off with this end. It's like, but he's not like Moses. No one has been like Moses ever since Moses. He was the only one. He was unique. No one else knew God face to face and did all the miracles like Moses had done. And as we read about in a previous portion in Deuteronomy, back in chapter 18, Moses had commanded the people of Israel that they will need to follow a prophet whom God will raise from among the brothers of Israel, a prophet like Moses. Moses has already promised that even though he's dying, there will be another prophet like Moses. But the Torah here is saying that prophet like Moses is not Joshua, and it's not the other prophets of Israel going forward. And so the Torah ends on a note of being expectant, of waiting for that prophet like Moses because he hasn't shown up yet. And so there is a vacancy at the very top level of the people of Israel. And we also see that the Torah ends before the people of Israel inherit the promise because it ends at the death of Moses. So Moses got them almost all the way there, but he didn't get them all the way. And the reason why Moses couldn't lead the people of Israel across the Jordan to inherit the promise is for two reasons. One, because he died. And two, because he had sinned. And that's why God had said, you're going to die on this end of the Jordan. So these two things, Moses' sin and Moses' mortality, made him unable to complete the mission that God had given him. He got them almost all the way there, and he gave them what they needed to go all the way. But Moses by himself could not do it. And so this points forward to the prophet like Moses, the Messiah, Yeshua, the one who will never die, the one who never sinned, the perfect leader of Israel, who will help us to claim the eternal promised land like Hosea was talking about. Moses could only get the people of Israel so far. The Torah can only get us so far. We need that prophet like Moses, Yeshua, to take us all the way. The Torah is the foundation. The Torah is what laid out the promises. The Torah is what prepared the people of Israel to claim the promises. But the Torah is not the promise itself. The Torah points to something greater, to someone greater who can lead us into everlasting life, can lead us into the everlasting promised land, and can lead the people of Israel into everlasting peace in their own land for the rest of their generations. We need that prophet who can speak to God face to face, who can mediate for us like Moses mediated for the people of Israel. We need that prophet like Moses who can perform miracles greater than any that had ever been performed in history. We need a prophet like Moses who can defeat death itself. Death has no power over him, and so he can lead his people and intercede for them to the very end. That is the kind of prophet we need, and that prophet is found in the Messiah, Yeshua.
This verse specifically says that there has been no prophet like Moses since because of all the signs and the wonders that Adonai sent him to do in the land of Egypt to Pharaoh and to all his servants and to all his land, and for all the mighty power and all the great deeds of terror that Moses did in the sight of all Israel. So Moses is specifically a unique prophet that no one else has been like in all of Israel's history because of how God used him and sent him as a deliverer to bring Israel out of Egypt. How he did those signs and wonders in God's name. And by those miracles, he brought the people of Israel out of the land of their captivity and brought them to the land of Israel. And so in order for the prophet like Moses to come, he has to come in a similar way with signs and wonders and deliverance for his people to bring them to their own land in the likeness of when Moses brought Israel out of Egypt. The prophets themselves testify to this, and they say it will come in the days of the Messiah. As Jeremiah prophesied in the passage that Josiah already read, "Behold, the days are coming, declares Adonai, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch. And he shall reign as king and deal wisely and shall execute justice and righteousness in the land. In his days, Judah will be saved and Israel will dwell securely. And this is the name by which he will be called. Adonai is our righteousness. Therefore, behold, the days are coming, declares Adonai, when they shall no longer say, as Adonai lives, who brought up the people of Israel out of the land of Egypt. But as Adonai lives, who brought up and led the offspring of the house of Israel out of the north country and out of all the countries where he had driven them, then they shall dwell in their own land. So in the days of Messiah, the son of David, there is going to be a return of the people of Israel in the likeness of the return that came in the days of Moses. He is going to bring up the people of Israel from all the countries where they are scattered, and he is going to lead them as Moses led them in the wilderness. He's going to lead them and bring them back to their land. And so he will do what no one has done since Moses. He will deliver Israel and bring them to the land. Throughout the Torah, especially near the end, with the song of Moses and with the blessings and the curses, Moses has been warning about how the promises cannot be fulfilled until Israel has rejected God and has been exiled and then turns to God and is restored. So here at the end of the Torah, it says that no one has come like Moses. The prophet like Moses has not come because there's been no one to do what Moses did and bring the people to the land. And of course, that couldn't happen until the people were dispersed from the land again. And so all the prophets which came after Moses were completely unable to do this. It cannot happen until the prophet, who is the branch of David, the reigning king, the Messiah, he comes when all the people of Israel who have been scattered seek him, and he comes and gathers them and brings them all back. That is when the prophet like Moses will do what Moses did, will be like Moses. And that is when these final words of the Torah will have their fruition. Everything that has been in the entire Torah ultimately ends in this. It ends in Messiah. This is exactly what Paul says, that an end or goal of Torah is Messiah. That's what it means. Everything that was in the Torah, the destination is Messiah, Yeshua, our master.
And one last thing before we wrap up the Torah portions is that a lot of Jews will look at Yeshua and say, well, he hasn't done this. He didn't restore the exile. He didn't restore the kingdom to Israel. So how can he be the Messiah? And the answer to that is that the Messiah is actually going to do this twice. There will be a time in the future when Yeshua will come back and he will deliver our people and he'll bring us back from all the nations where we were scattered. But first, Yeshua had another exodus to do. Yeshua's people were slaves in a different way, and they needed to be set free from their slavery. And that was their slavery to sin. It was a slavery that the people of Israel didn't even realize they were enslaved to. And yet Yeshua came to deliver them. He had to come first as a sin offering, as a sacrifice, as a means by which the people of Israel can enter into the new covenant, receive the circumcision of their hearts, and be saved. So he had to offer that means of salvation, that direct path to God, so that way he could take away that slavery and bring a path of restoration to Israel. And then once the people of Israel are all in line and they're all following Yeshua, once they all accept that salvation and follow him, then he can finally return. When we all say, Baruch haba b'shem Adonai, blessed is he who is coming in the name of the Lord, and then Yeshua will return to Jerusalem and he will restore our captivity, he will defeat our enemies, he will bring us back to our land, and then we will all serve him forever for the rest of days, and then he will bring us into the eternal promised land to New Jerusalem, when we can all serve him and rest in the glory of the King, of the Messiah, of the Lamb, and of God, where there will be no temple, for he will be our temple, and we will live where there is no night. It will always be day because he will shine, he will be the sun, and we will all live in his promised land forever.
Amen. And so this is the application of this portion and the whole book of Deuteronomy, and indeed the whole Torah. We must have the faith to choose, follow, and live our whole lives in the way of God's salvation, Yeshua. Moses' life and Moses' death are the perfect images of what living a life of faith for Messiah looks like. He was willing to leave everything behind. He spent 40 years in the most insufferable of circumstances, but he did it all to serve God. He did it all because he believed in the promise and he believed that God would give him the way to life. And God did, because God sent Yeshua to redeem him, even Moses, from his sin. such that even that which barred Moses from the promised land did not keep him from entering into the heavenly promised land in Messiah. Ever since Adam and Eve sinned and brought death into the world, this has been the goal, to find the way to life, to find the way back to God. And God has provided that way, and he paved it with faith. Through Noah, who had the faith to take the narrow way of salvation in the ark, and through Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, God showed that faith comes from believing God's promises and following them even when it looks foolish, and even when you spend your whole life not receiving the promise. Mm. Abraham and Isaac and Jacob were not ashamed, and God was not ashamed of them, because they remained faithful to his promises, and he remained faithful to his promises. And as Moses also had the faith to choose God's way and to follow in it and leave this world behind, Moses also showed the exact way of faith that we need to follow. And throughout the whole Torah, he exemplified what it looks like to walk that way. That the way of faith is shown in action. Mm. He showed it by submitting his entire life to God's plans, to doing his part in what God wanted him to do. He obeyed God's call to be his servant and his messenger and to bring his people out of Egypt and to lead them in the wilderness and give them his commands and fight against Israel every step of the way to bring them into the land of the promise. And he instructed Israel on how to follow through in that, on how to do their part in God's plan by being God's holy people. Mm. They had to walk according to his rules, live according to God's holiness. That is faith in action right there. It's setting everything aside, setting your own plans and purposes aside, and taking on God's holiness for yourself. Putting the world aside, leaving that behind, and taking instead God's set-apartness, his holiness. And taking all the blessings and all the provisions that God gives for us and being faithful and content with them. Since we are having faith in God's promises, everything needs to be geared toward that. Mm. Everything needs to be geared toward following God's plan. And so everything that he gives us is a tool for that. Mm. And even when God does not give us things, he is still providing for us what we need. He's still showing us the way. And so that is what we should be satisfied with, is walking in God's way, no matter what we have, taking everything we have and putting that in line with, how do I serve you, God? Mm. How do I walk the way? What is your plan? How can I be holy for you? And believing that if we do all of that, then at the end of that narrow road that so few find, we will find life in Messiah. In everything we do, we need to look backward at what we were so that we know what Yeshua has set us free from. Mm. And we need to look forward to know what he has set us free for. We need to remember the sin we were in and the death and destruction that that leads to. We need to see two paths, our way or God's way. Blessing or curse, life or death, us or Messiah. And so at the end of it all, we need to submit everything we have, our whole lives, all our wants and our plans and our provisions and every pattern of behavior, and put that in line with God's path. Mm. We choose God's path. We follow God's path. We walk God's path by putting our faith in the Messiah Yeshua in action. And if we follow that way, then we will find salvation. We will find Yeshua. We will find the everlasting life in his heavenly promised land.
That wraps up the portion of Vezot HaBaracha and the entire Torah. Thank you so much for watching this video and for watching our whole series. We hope you'll go through the whole series again this year, starting this Shabbat. Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to like, share, comment, subscribe, and hit the notification bell to keep updated on new videos on our channel. And if you would, please consider sending us a donation to help us make more videos on our channel. We would really appreciate it. Thanks again for watching, and we'll see you soon. God bless.